Anyway, it is now my great pleasure to introduce someone who doesn't really need an introduction. Lars Musenius is probably the first ever Linux user. Who is now also, well, the second. Who is now also a Debian developer. And in the course of that, we create a little application to help everyone create better packages, which is what he's talking about today, right? So please, everyone, welcome Lars Musenius. Thank you.
I was going to start this talk with the words, I come in peace, please make me your leader, but I will skip. This talk is about things that I have done since last summer. Mainly I have been torturing Debian packages and finding problems in them. Debian's major goal is to create an operating system that is free, but is also very, very good. We have a good reputation for quality. Most of it is well earned, I think. We also have a tendency to think very well of ourselves and our quality. Some time ago I looked at statistics from the Debian packaging, mark tracking system. And we had fixed about 300,000 or 350,000 packages, out of which only 60,000 were still open. So we have fixed a lot of bugs, so obviously quality is high. The major way that we have of fighting packages, finding problems in packages, is by user testing. We upload, we possibly make a stable release, and then we hope that people report problems. The Debian bug tracking system is fairly good, fairly approachable, so people do report a lot of problems, and we mostly fix them. And this process actually works amazingly well, because you rarely hear about a Debian package that accidentally removed the user's entire file system. Well, not all that experimental. And so as a basic process, this is good, it works. But it is not the ultimate process. It does not work very well for obscure packages. There are quite a number of packages among these, about 15,000 packages in Debian, that are only used by the maintainer and maybe a few friends of his, or other people who need exactly that package and nothing else. And there's nothing wrong with such packages. But they don't get a lot of testing, and for many of these people, they want to install the package and they never ever want to uninstall it. So the post-iron sticks are never tested. And if you get a situation where someone who is curious about that package installs it and decides that it's boring and then removes it, and then suddenly he has no file system, this is not very good. But this problem does not apply only to obscure packages. It's also, there are also a lot of problems that happen in more popular packages. So the way to solve this is to, or improve on the situation, is to systematically test everything, every package in Debian. This has a tendency to require a lot of workforce, a lot of drudges, and we can use those drudges for better use. We can also use programming for dealing with this. So last summer I created a program which got the name PUParts for package installation, upgrading, and removal testing suite. The name was suggested by Tolle Foghén, also known as Mitt Randir. One of the reasons why I took this suggestion was that Google could not find a single use of this word. This is very important. I used to have a package in Debian called SEX, and that was slightly less easy to find with Google. NewParse is basically very simple. It creates a CSU, a small, minimal sort of Debian installation within the file system. It installs packages there, removes them, and checks that everything looks all right after the removal. Even so, this is, despite the simplicity, it is very, very effective. So, how to use NewParse? You first create some Debian packages, and then you run this complicated command line. I have tried to make it as simple as possible to use so that more people will use it. It creates a CSU automatically. It figures out your mirror from your apt source system list with some commits. It sometimes does not guess correctly, and then things break, but you can use options to fix that. Then it installs, then removes, and then purges the packages. Both the packages named on the command line and any dependencies that it had to install in order to be able to install the packages on the command. And then it checks the state of the CSU before and after, and any files that exist afterwards or that used to exist beforehand or that have been modified are reported. And there's some other errors too, but mostly. NewParse produces a lot of output. Some of the log files I create are about 200 kilobytes. And reading 200 kilobytes of log files is not very fun. Trust me, I've been doing that for 6 months. Therefore, all the errors should be at the end. That's where I go to look for them. Sometimes there's useful stuff earlier, but if there is no indication of an error at the end, then there's no need to go read anywhere else. So, this is a slightly shortened version of a NewParse log file. The red parts are meant to be interesting. First, a timestamp. Timestamps are relative to the beginning of the NewParse run. I'm not interested in exactly when the command was run. I'm interested in how long it took, therefore, relative timestamps. Then there is an indication that the next line is a debug line. There's various kinds of status information that NewParse outputs that can be interesting to look through. Every time NewParse runs an external command, it looks a bit like those lines. It reports the command line that it's running and then all the output that comes. If the command expects some input from the keyboard, standard input, or devtty, then things stop. And you have to figure out why they stopped without getting any help from NewParse. This may become a problem eventually, and in that case, tell me and I will try to fix it. But the first thing it does, it creates the CSU using the bootstrap, which can take a little while. Actually, it can take about 1 minute on my machine according to this log file. In addition to running the bootstrap, it also creates a policy dot. Policy RCD dot, well, that command, which is something that Debian has invented that can be used to prevent daemons from starting. And this is useful for the kinds of things that NewParse does, because, for example, I don't want to start the UDEV service within the CSU. This would cause bad things to happen. The next line is temporary. there's a slight problem in dpackage when related to directory shared by various packages that contain conf files. When it removes one of those packages, removes not purchase, it leaves the actual file in its the packages list of files, but it removes the directory. And if you then remove the other package sharing that directory, the package outputs some errors. And that line there is a reminder for me to change p parts in a certain way when this dpackage bug is fixed. Then it installs the .web file given the command line using dpackage.ai. And then this next command, which is slightly complicated, or looks to be full of options, pulls in all the dependencies. This was a cheap trick that I used to do that. For some packages, they don't have any special dependencies. It would be useful, not use, but it takes no time to run. During these 0.4 seconds, what pupars does is basically it starts decides on which packages it needs to remove, namely all packages that are now installed in the CSU that didn't used to be installed beforehand. And then it starts running dpackage remove on all of them, which sometimes fails because you can't remove foo if bar is depending on it. So eventually it needs to run remove with pending, which removes everything that hasn't been removed already. And then it does the same with purge. I could do the purging directly, but doing this two-step process finds more bugs. Yes. And eventually it comes to the comparison part where it compares file list before and after. And since it's my package, it passes the installation. If you see this line, then the basic installation removal purging test has passed. And that is good. It then starts again, creating a CSroot and installing the package with apt-get, not with dpackage. Meaning that it gets the previous version, or presumed previous version, from your archive. And then it does the dpackage-i thing, meaning that it upgrades the package to the version that you have just built. And the rest is basically the same. And surprise, surprise, this finds more problems. If there are any to be found, not in my packages. Anymore. Okay, some of the problems that can happen. This is one that I hate. Not the package, but the problem that you get. Some of the commands that pupars runs may fail. For example, if the removal fails first time, it might be because a dependency package needs to be removed first. Those kinds of errors are ignored. Some errors can't be ignored because they are crucial, and in that case, pupars reported the command, the exit code called status, and all the output that the command outputted. Standard out and standard error. And in this case, what happened was that it started running the post installation script, which failed. And between those two red lines, I have removed absolutely nothing, meaning that the post installation script, while failing, did not indicate why it failed. I hate that. Because I hate it, this was the first example. But a more typical example is this. while being installed, the package has installed some automatically created some files outside those files automatically maintained by the package, and then fails to remove them when the package is purged. QPart tries, like here, owned by, to report which packages owns which files that it knows about, which is helpful for tracking out the culprit. In this case, it might have been someone who left the room before I started the talk. Okay, the top five list of my favorite hateful things that you can find. Well, hateful is perhaps slightly strong, except for number four. Number one, a very typical, probably the most common problem. Postinst creates some file, like a config file, not a conf file, but a basic configuration file, or a log file, or something else, and postrm does not then remove it when the package is purged. This happens fairly often. Then maintainers test installation, upgrading, removal, etc. manually. They do it usually on their development machine or machine that they use most, and they're always very happy to see these files because they need them anyway. So they don't notice that there is something extra. Number two, alternatives are a great thing, and they're fairly easy to do. And just with a single typo, you can create a problem. The way they work is that you run update alternatives in postinst to create some symlinks, and then with certain parameters in postrm to remove them. And if one of those parameters is spelled wrong, which can happen if you copy and paste a lot of text between packages, update alternatives fails to remove some of the files. This is a bit of a special case of number one, but happens fairly often. I'm not saying that it happens especially often in, for example, Emacs-related packages, but it does. Or actually, it used to. Also, slightly related to this, using UCF in postrm during a purge is a great thing, if it's there. If it's not, it's a policy violation. Immediate release critical bug. Unfortunately, UCF is not essential, meaning that you have to check for whether it's there. And if it's not, then deal with the error. The reason why a number of packages have problems related to UCF is that the earlier version of the UCF documentation had an incorrect example. It's fixed now. And then we have my favorite hateful object, number four. Whenever I see this in a postrm script, a postinst script, or any other maintainer script, I start to giggle, because I know I will be able to report a bug. The reason why people have a tendency to redirect errors away is that, for example, if you run add user with default settings, default options, it creates a lot of output, which is ugly, unless there is a problem. If add user fails, the output turns from ugly to beautiful because it allows you to debug. But because many people haven't looked at add user and noticed that it has a quiet option, they decide to output all that boring, ugly stuff somewhere else. And, well, basically, add user is a well-tested basic package that never fails. Ha! But it never fails because the way PewPart uses it is not the way that most people use it. PewPart sets up the chroot with certain defaults that are not what people actually use. Therefore, PewPart uses code paths in that user that don't usually get exercised. about that redirection, never ever use it. If you think you have to use it, A, never use it. B, get professional help. Or C, talk to someone who actually understands what is going on and make sure that it's really an appropriate thing to do. And number five, starting init.b services by calling the script directly, not through invoke rc.b. This is important because policy rc.b does not work unless you use that command. The policy manual almost says that using that invoke command is mandatory, but not quite. And it's relatively new in Debian terms, meaning only a few years old. So we are in a transition period.
Excuse me, but if you remove your /dev/moo to something else, then you will be able to catch all the errors in /dev/moo.
Yes. If you redirect not to devnull but to a file, which some Emacs packages did, I think it was Emacs, might have been commons. You can find the error messages there. But it's still better to see them directly instead of making either me or the actual problematic person, the sysadmin, go find them somewhere else. So it's better to output nothing if there is no error, and output the actual error text if there is an error.
Yes, that was the initial idea. Just remover /dev/moo and make it a link to your terminal. Your still.
But then it doesn't get into the feedback log file.
Okay.
Are you going to read from your terminal whenever somebody wants to read zero input? Which is a problem.
Plus, DevNull is also used for good stuff. Like, well, you could read from DevNull.
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry.
Since we are getting closer to 6 o'clock, I will go further. The building of a CSU, the machine that I ran the test on earlier, is fairly fast and it has a local mirror. And this is not always true for people who build Debian packages. So they would prefer not to build a CSU for 15 minutes every time. And I quite agree, therefore I have created an option -p. Everyone uses pbuilder. Everyone who doesn't use pbuilder preferably then really knows what they are doing. The -b option for viewer uses the base.tgz file that that pbuilder builds, which makes the process very fast. Alternatively, you can use the -s and -b options to build the CSU yourself with pu parts, and that will work equally well. And in that case, instead of taking a minute or 15 minutes on my laptop, it will take a few seconds. It basically only creates a directory, unpacks a tarball, and it's done. This can still be slow if you have a slow machine, but mostly it's good. Then when you start actually using the CSU, you need to download packages with apt-get. At this point, I'm advising either a local mirror or a good web cache. If you don't have either, then be patient. I originally wrote view parts in June, I think, and I have actively been using it to test packages in Edge and Seed since then, since August actually. DevConf happened and my summer vacation happened, so it took a while before I got started. It was has changed during these 6 months because I have found out that Debian package maintainers are creative in the ways that they can break things. Sometimes also creative in which they can do the correct thing that I hadn't expected. Anyway, I basically keep running Vuebox using a nice distributed system called Vuebox Master and Slave on two machines that I have at home and report any problems. I test two things. I test the basic installation, removal and purging test to make sure that the package works at all in SID. And then I test an upgrade from Sarge to Edge to SID. And the latter one these days finds most of the problems. These Vuebox master and slave keep track of each log file is for a failed run or a correct run. And then I analyze all the failed runs manually and report bugs accordingly. I decided to start to actually report bugs for any failures instead of doing it the Lintian way, which reports lots of huge numbers of errors and warnings on a web page that nobody ever reads, except Google. I have reported by the end of January about 260 bugs, which is not a whole lot, but about 3 bugs per day or so. 110 of these had been fixed by early February. 40% or so. Could be better, perhaps. But admittedly, most of the bugs that Vuebox finds are fairly non-damaging. If there's a file left on the file system, that's bad because it shouldn't be there, but it doesn't actually actively break anything. It's worse if files disappear. But some things that I have thought of doing in the future. At the moment, the CA script that Vuebox creates does not have a proc file system. The reason it doesn't is that so few packages use invoke rc.b. They run the init script directly, which then uses start.daemon, which fails if there is no proc file system. I'm going to change this eventually so that there is a proc file system, all the daemons are started, and then also hopefully stopped when things go bad or the package is removed. And then Vuebox will start checking for any processes that remain alive after the package has been purged. And if there are any of those, I will giggle and report the bug. I will also try to automate the analysis of failed logs to the extent possible. Because reading 100 failed logs per day is really boring. There are a lot of failed logs every day, partly because certain people keep uploading new versions of packages without fixing bugs I have reported. Which is sometimes is quite understandable because the bugs are minor. Anyway. And partly because some of the problems are for things that either are a problem in my test setup, an incomplete error. If my dev mirror run fails and I have half the packages of 1 day's deinstall run, then lots of packages will fail testing. And I have to go through all the failed logs and check for problems. Further things, I would like to run Vuebox on multiple architectures. I run it on 386 at the moment. And for this, I would like to have people who help me with this, because I don't want to start buying PowerPC machines and ARM machines and M68 machines especially. I got to skip the entire Amiga period, so I'm not going back now. But I would like to see M68K people join the Bioparts League Legion.
Let's make sure Coldfire from Mars first.
The master slave thing that I have created should allow, after minor modifications, for multiple people to cooperate so that they can keep running the slave portion that runs the actual tests in parallel. I'm also trying to get into a situation where whenever I make a major change in view parts, I have access to fast enough or enough computing power that I can rerun all the tests that used to work. Sometimes it finds new bugs, sometimes it does not. There are also some packages that replace parts of the CH2 that existed before. Packages of priority extra that replace base packages or standard packages. At the moment, few parts can't deal with that. That means that certain parts of the archive can't be tested. And that's not good. And there are a number of other minor improvements. Hopefully, people will have ideas for more. I've been doing this so far pretty much alone. It has been fine. I've been paid for it. But I would like some help. The thing that sucks up most of my time is processing paid log files. It would be nice to be able to distribute this work. Exactly how, I don't know yet, but that can be discussed. I would also like everyone to test their packages before they upload. When we come into a situation where I never ever have to look at a failed log file again, I'm very happy. And of course, I would like to hear suggestions for improvements. If you have patches, those are especially welcome, but mere suggestions are also. Any questions, remarks, suggestions, patches?
Yeah, I have a question. Why not do this as part of KeyBuilder? Why have a separate tool? I'm concerned that with a separate tool, people forget to run it.
Yes, they do. Part of the problem is that KeyBuilder, I didn't want to make it part of KeyBuilder because I didn't like the way KeyBuilder was built.
Okay.
It works very well, and people who want to write shell scripts, it's okay. I wanted to write Python. It's also, KeyBuilder requires you to build a package. You can't keep running it on an entire archive, and well, unless you want to build the packages too. And I didn't want to do that. I said something negative about KeyBuilder just now. I don't want to give the impression that KeyBuilder is bad or that it's badly written. I'm just anyholic. Strongly anyholic.
What's the sort of false positive, false negative ratio?
Let's see. False positive would be that it reports a failure when there was none.
Right.
I don't recall that seeing that for several months. And when I do, it's because I have changed something in people. Wrong. False negatives would be that it fails to find a problem. I have no idea. If people claims that the test worked, then I never look at the log file. It's 200 kilobytes, I'm not going to be able to.
Presumably there are some cases where you'd only catch problems if you, say, choose a random set of other packages to install at the same time, or
yes.
If you install one set, then a second set, and then...
Yes. The main view part is done is it basically creates a minimal CH2. And obviously, sometimes other packages interfere, and in that case, p+1 find the problem. But I'm hoping that those cases are rare. And if they're not rare, I'll have to figure something out.
And so the p-part that I get to run as a maintainer, it also to test upgrades from stable?
If you run it correctly, yes. The command I gave does not run the cross-distribution, cross-release test. You have to give three options named -d. -d stable, -d edge, -d sync. And then it does that. And you really, really want to look at the -b and -s options too.
Okay, but you said that it does stable to edge to SID.
Yes.
But I feel you really want to test stable to SID because that package is a candidate to become something.
If you want
edge.
To test that, then you give -d stable, -d SID.
Okay.
So basically, it should work. Some people earlier today suggested running uploads to experimental and volatile and stuff also. The -d option hopefully will work for that. But I haven't ever tested it, so it might not.
Possible ideas for getting more help could be, marketed as something that could be done also by non-Debian developers. Like if you want to help Debian run Viewpart, or giving fast tracking people in an MQ if they are more
I like you.
Can we just normal speed track people through an MQ?
Okay. How about auto detecting P builder and not needing -p?
Say again.
Like you said, you could reuse the CHO of pbuilder.
Yes.
But with -p.
Yes.
And how about just if there is pbuilder using it and adding a -non-p in case there's problem?
That could work, but that wasn't the way I happened to do it.
One thing that I'm slightly concerned about there is that you test upgrading, but you never test downgrading.
We don't support it.
It as in an official sense, but the packaging system does support it, and it can expose bugs.
Yes. Again, I haven't ever tried this, but if you use the -d options in the other order, it should work.
So have you had any other people running this against the archive yet, or is it still just you so far?
I think at least two or three other people have run it at least partly, but there have been little cooperation between us.
Okay. I'll be contacting you later. I've got seven architects in the home with a local mode.
I love you too!
Would it be possible to adapt it to another distribution, RPM based, or is it too much Debian based?
I have no idea. But I think the basic principle should be the same.
We've got a lot of tools now for testing packages. Someone suggested integrating a pbuilder, but wouldn't it be time for a command to run on your package and have output from this Linda girl and from this geo part?
I have that command,
okay.
But it's quite specific to the way I maintain my packages. But yes, it would be nice to have something.
I'm implementing CVDS. Next up, that your rules target.
Bill?
Ideally, we could try to run a pure part like build daemon. Each time the package is uploaded, there are specific computers that run pure part on the package, and we get logs. And eventually we flag the failure, and so the maintainer gets the log of all the build and the pure part run and see whether it goes fine, so you don't have to report the bug, and eventually if we can also perform an upgrade, a SAR to H upgrade, and then we Ideally, we could block the package to enter testing if it cannot see the web fail. It would reduce problem with that.
I think I agree with the idea that Debian should not accept a package that hasn't been tested by few parts. Well, that might be slightly too radical as of right now. You, I guess.
Have you yet had anyone talk to you about running QParts using dcherit rather than unpacking churits each time?
Using what?
Dcherit.
The thing which is used on the Debian
version. No, because I like to build my CSchurit myself.
Right, I was just thinking that if there was some way for QParts to work with dcherit and some limited sort of root access system of some kind, like userp or similar, then it would plausibly become something that could run on a, it would be something that could start being run on a developer access machine as a service provided by
the this might work, but I think I would advise against it for the reason that I'm afraid of the bug that echoes something to /dev/HDA. Having seen someone trying to dial up his hard disk once. That's good. But anyway. So I think I prefer to run PewParts on a dedicated machine. I have wanted to look at running PewParts under a virtual machine, Xen or QEMU or something. UML, but I haven't had time to look at that because I've been reading really long files. Sorry, I think we are up of time.
We are out of time. Well, you're the last talk about it, and we'll have to close down. So, thank you very much for your time.